Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. It occurs to me like that change from believing in a separation, a separate self, to embodying the presence, the non-dual, changes your perspective about consciousness, or it did me. I couldn't think about like a collective awakening or humanity awakening because I was too focused on my own suffering, which protected me and kept me surviving as a separate self. But for me, it was like I just hadn't embodied the realization fully. So it was a leftover chronic pain and anger repression producing some shadows and other things that, you know, were still separation in my experience. It had to be embodied. And as it was, I saw that, wow, I mean, it's all relationship. Unless we're just so disconnected and living in solitude, which, you know, I would say question that, because a lot of us had trauma and we may have come to spirituality with a disconnection from our bodies and people. And we don't want our spirituality to take us there, especially when you really do realize there's no separation. At some point you grok that to some degree, and there's a even deepening of that. And that's what I'm talking about. It's the embodiment process is not black and white or sudden. It's an opening, and it's the real awakening is the embodiment. The initial awakening is the safe, it's the initial start. It's safe to the ego, and any repression will be there still for many people in trauma, making sure that it's still safe emotionally, because the waking up doesn't guarantee at all that repression, as I've said before, comes into awareness, and that's the root of suffering. So to me, the awakening, the embodiment process is the awakening, truly. And the initial recognition of awareness is just like a recognition, if we're going to use the awakening language. But I think in the future, it's just going to be simpler. It's going to be, well, we'll have to use words to refer to it, but it doesn't have to be anything exalted. We can ground it in human experience directly. It's in our lives. It's what we are. If you look right now, well, even if you don't know, you are the awakeness that's here, that which perceives. And yeah, your consciousness may immediately go for survival purposes to there's a me, but it's supposed to do that. That's not a mistake so much as an evolution for survival. As I've said, Donald Hoffman did that thought experiment. He's a leading cognitive scientist and truly, in my view, kind of a revolutionary thinker. He basically is saying reality is like just a virtual headset. Space and time are doomed. It's a dramatic way of saying, well, that's a convenient tool. Space and time is a tool for survival. To know that I'm this object, there are those objects. I eat some of those objects. Some of those objects could attack me. I have to hide from some of those other objects and people. And there's the separation. But it's not just evolution. I mean, one thing I do disagree, I'm going to go back to this thought experiment. It's not just evolution divorced from our bodies. As long as there's been humans, there's been intergenerational trauma. And so we can't divorce the body from evolution and our own trauma and repression. So his thought experiment, now that you have that context, as I've said before, is there's two choices that he would give humans. And this is to see how we adapt, how we've evolved to be where we are. Did we choose, when we're choosing each day or experiencing, are we experiencing reality? Are we seeing an accurate representation of what is, and we're just acting there? Or are we choosing for purposes of survival, safety? And the number of times that people in the experiment chose freedom, truth, and accurate, well, whatever that is, something other than survival, was zero. What I would add to the thought experiment, I want to talk to Hoffman, because I would say, look, you just need to do another experiment with people who've done some embodiment work and see if anything changes, because we can learn so much from that either way. In other words, if that doesn't change, then when somebody recognize his presence as the ground of being, they're still driven by the survival conditioning. And so his thought experiment becomes, in a way, this is the way that science and spirituality will come together in the future. Those kinds of experiments are applicable to people who are interested in direct experience, because we're choosing avoidance. We're choosing survival. We're choosing ego consciousness. Even though our minds might say, well, I want to be free. I want truth. See, it's the same. Unconscious choice. And that's the pain-pleasure principle. And Donald Hoffman then is one thinker in the line of a bunch of thinkers for which Freud was a foundational thinker, that emotional repression is driving all that. I've done a bunch of blogging on the Medium, if you want to check it out, to lay out this in my perspective. It's not peer-reviewed, but KI can't be because it's too new. And it's pretty different. And you don't peer-review something that's trying to change the status quo because there's no peers. They don't like us, basically, because people didn't like Freud for a long time. I think that when you start talking about the thing that we're afraid of, people more and more want to choose survival and safety. So we've come to see that here. And then, of course, we've adopted the methodology to help people with that stop suffering by choosing survival of a separate self. That's what the conditioning of repression is doing. So what we have is something actually groundbreaking here, but it's pretty quiet and people don't really know about it. And it really is, because you will see in the future that we've not only have we mapped out how we suffer and how we avoid or bypass, but how we choose suffering and produce it, and then therefore how we can make conscious that mechanism and open to the embodiment process. It's not going to be a sudden thing, because our conditioning is always choosing safety even after the initial awakening. That's why there's repression still for many people. We just don't know it, and we'll sit there as awareness and go, yeah, I'm done. But we get something out of that. Stay safe from the buried emotions, and that's survival of the separate self. Even if it doesn't look like there's a self there in experience, that's convenient. See, space and time is a convenient headset, even when you've woken up, because your space and time is still there. Your orientation to who you know, to who others are, or what the world is, or what spirituality is. We have a conceptualization when we wake up, and that's when we can go back to ego identification for safety, is if our conceptualization, if we don't do the embodiment work, then we're just believing the mind stuff again. And we think that we're choosing freedom or truth, or that we're living in it. But that comes from the repression that just says that. It's a belief or an identity, a spiritual ego. The real transformation destroys all of that. It's like waking up from your awakening in the end. It's so freeing. But now, how do we, this is amazing. I just want to share this with you. What we're doing is we're talking to a lot of people, you guys, who have trauma and repression and who feel separate and disconnected. And your bodies are producing that sense of separation. And we're telling you that we know how to make that mechanism conscious. And if we can get you from your state of disconnection and separation to treat KI as something other than a mistress, other than just a fly-by-night, let's try it for a while and sabotage it from the same mechanism that chooses suffering. If you slow down with us, we want to show you so much about your life and let you see it for yourself by seeing how you choose suffering to avoid pain. It's all unconscious, though. You're living that thought experiment. And it's so because it's unconscious, it creates a lot of confusion, frustration, more suffering. When we keep thinking we're choosing freedom and then the suffering stays, we don't understand that our system has to produce the suffering when we get a little bit of freedom. If we don't get to repression, because repression is the driver. So we get temporary bypassing states. We get half-baked realizations that don't get to repression. Repression kicks suffering back in, all the way up into a dark night of the soul if it needs to, truthfully. But for everyone, it's going to kick in some suffering if buried emotions aren't processed. And this is just the thing that was staring me right in the face. that if it can bring people in out of their disconnection, out of their sense of separation, we can start to see that it's all relationship. And that's where KI ends up going. And that's what this is about. I had to give you all that context again to tell you that even when people are in relationship, they're choosing separation. So when you come here, we want to get to the repression that's choosing separation and disconnection in relationship so you can be free. But more than that, it's not about just being free of suffering. It's about seeing who and what you are. And you're already inseparable from everything. That's what you already are. So relationship at this level becomes a really profound exploration into what is it like authentically to be in the world, in relationship, to really be yourself. And that's not something that you can point to. And if any teacher tells you they can, say, where's my authentic being? Point to it. You know, we can point to presence, but we have to process buried emotions for authenticity and genuine transformation. That's Bessel van der Kolk. And, you know, when I've done all this research, do you know whose name kept coming up that AI kept trusting because he's so respected? Bessel van der Kolk, even more than a lot of teachers on the issue of transformation, because he has some really solid data there, and more will come. And, you know, KI is just right there with his, he's really putting together the East and the West. If you look at it, it's present moment awareness, and then it's processing the root of suffering. And it eluded so many people, I think, for so long that absent those two things, we have to suffer and keep suffering because it's the mechanism of repression that we're avoiding those buried emotions that produces the suffering, and then we seek to alleviate it. And then whenever we, any pleasure or safety that we get from temporarily relieving it, temporarily, the system goes, here's some more suffering. You know, this is why you go to retreats, and afterwards you're like, I got it. And your system goes, no, you don't. Here's relationship. Here's some more suffering. Or you sit down in meditation or you do some mindfulness, you feel really open, and then your girlfriend walks in. And it's like, I'm back to that little boy who I get angry. Because that's how you survive. Your system is choosing separation because it's to its conditioning that through evolution and trauma, it's just much safer. It's like that's a guarantee we can keep that separate self alive if we can keep doing this. It doesn't know anything else. Do you know anything else other than separation? Is there some other operating system that's helping you see non-duality? There is no operating system that's there. The operating system is for separation, the conditioning is. And so whenever you're even thinking about who you are, you could be coming from your conditioning. And there's some science that says when you ruminate or think about your experience a lot, your emotional experience, that could just be coming from the repression. And so a lot of the ruminating about spirituality keeps us out of our bodies. There's my basic thesis in most of my blogs, actually, is I'm saying these theories are fine. And I like to talk stuff, but that made me pretty sick after a while, is to talk about this stuff because I kept suffering. Especially when I was not talking about how we create suffering. So when I talk now, at least it's for me, it's about getting to the root. And the talk is not distracting from how suffering is created. But I noticed that in relationship, it's different because I'm coming to talk to you guys. And, you know, you guys are, many of you have repression. And so you're choosing safety and avoidance. And it's like, how do I talk to you? This is the part about it's all relationship. There shouldn't even be the question of how do I talk to you? Just be myself. That's all. The whole thing about how, it goes back to the end of that consciousness. How? Well, that the conditioning would have always said, be false, hold yourself back. And now it doesn't say that. And if somebody, if in a relationship, the question comes up is, how do I express myself to someone I'm in relationship with? It doesn't come up. And it really shouldn't come up as somebody who's teaching in a way. But because people have repression, if I share in a certain way that doesn't feel empathetic enough for a person who has anger repression, they might not hear me. They might not see that authentic empathy is not at all what identification with empathy is. That identification with empathy is a trauma response. The overly sensitive anger repressor, that's me. That's probably a lot of you. We just grow up very sensitive and empathic. And then we think that, well, I couldn't even begin to go in any direction if I don't see that kind of empathy, because it's a safety mechanism. So we look for people who are empathetic. But many of us with buried anger, we get with people who don't show empathy as much. And we bring suffering into our lives because of our identification with empathy and our buried anger. And we're not feeling our true feelings. And so as long as we're not feeling our true feelings, not only will we get with people who can't express empathy as much as we can because we're identified with it for safety, we'll have shadows. And then we might come to spirituality, and then we look for somebody who's as identified with empathy as we are from our buried anger. And then we keep choosing safety. We never hear somebody who says, I've already worked through that. And that's, your empathy is your identification. It's what creates such division in relationship, if you'll see. Empathy is a natural quality that you have when you embody presence. But when you haven't embodied it, it's a way of like being somebody. Not even somebody big or confident, but just being somebody who can protect themselves. But from a really unconscious place. Buried anger. Or buried hurt or sadness. But I'm just speaking to my experience. So relationship is like, all I've wanted to do is be myself with you in the last couple of years. And it's felt so good. I can't tell you that when I don't get a lot of likes, how good that feels, because it feels good either way, because I'm just being myself. And yet I know that if I don't perhaps come across in a way that makes you feel safe, well, that raises really big issues, doesn't it, about relationship? Because I don't think it's my responsibility ultimately to keep you safe at all. Or anyone. It's nobody's responsibility. And I say that to everybody with repression. In terms of emotional safety, nobody has that responsibility for you. That's a need that you have from childhood, a need to feel safe within yourself that your parents didn't help you with. And you buried emotions, and then you look at the world and it looks unsafe and separate. But that's your conditioning. And if you go just look for the people who are empathetic like you, it's your supply. It's ego. It's our narcissism. But it's also our self-protection. It's all we can do. But that's why we can't transform, many of us. Because we think like things like empathy and compassion and things, those are things that we should cultivate more. But many of us we've got that down. We need to cultivate the power that we've buried so that we can free ourselves from suffering and really connect with people. Like really feel that inseparable experience with people that's very intimate, but in a way that we can still self-protect. But from an awakeness, self-protect, let's talk about that. That's not a separate self. That's authenticity. Self-protection is just saying, no, I don't agree. And stop coming into my face like that. That's what it is. See, that's not a separate self. That might be clean response, or, and I never understood that, that if I can't say that, I'm not free. And if I can't disagree with you, I don't love you or me, really. I'm just protecting myself. But if I can feel and express what's true, that's me being myself, my authentic being, without trying to make sure that you're okay. I can't just be myself only if you're okay with it. And so as a teacher, there it is. And if it means having to be something false to reach you, I have to work with that. And I won't do it. I mean, I won't, even if people suggest it. But what I will do is, hopefully in the future, because I know it's all relationship, is I hope that you'll see the empathy. It comes with power, and that people with anger repression are powerless in their identification with empathy and their inability to be authentic with people. And therefore, they can't experience genuine transformation until the root of suffering is addressed. That's for everyone, because the pain pleasure mechanism will just keep creating it if you don't get to the root. See, that's authentic empathy. Now, inauthentic empathy would be, I know that you're suffering and I want to help you with that. And let's look at some of those core beliefs that I know are really making you suffer in relationship, and I can help you with that. And all that just ignores the root of suffering. So for me, empathy would have to be, okay, that's all true, of course, and I say it all the time. I've even cried for the suffering of people and for myself on camera. Of course, compassion. Of course, why do you think I teach? Oh my God, I don't have a problem with that. I never had a problem with that or empathy. That was never my problem. My problem was I couldn't be myself. And once I could be myself in relationship, then the compassion is already there. And it's balanced with the power and the boundaries and the assertiveness that has to happen with authenticity and transformation at the deeper level. Everybody who goes deep has boundaries because authenticity is there. It's no longer boundaries. It's nobody who gets free wants to hurt anyone or themselves. And so if they see people that want to do that, are they going to go along with it? No, probably not. Probably not. That's authentic empathy. Going along with suffering to get love and approval, even if it looks empathetic, it isn't. It's fear-based. I really saw a relationship, though, just working with people in teams and little partnerships, both related to this work and then outside things that I'm doing, where people do things together, collaborative efforts. And I learned things, just like we learn things in every relationship, I learned it in all those, how I am and my inauthenticity. And I learned that if I don't do, like I did, repression work, the way that I control a situation is by being quiet and empathetic towards everyone else's view. And it doesn't look like control because, well, it's quiet and empathetic. But basically, that has a controlling effect in a relationship where people have loud personalities and they don't know, especially if I'm a teacher, like, is it appropriate for me to express this? And people then won't be real. And they don't know that, well, if I have repression, I'm not being real. So it's a trauma bond. And what I've learned is, like, you know, just like somebody can come in and really control a situation because they're loud and they're big and they're dominating, I've seen anger repressors control an entire project from their own inertia and lack of decision making and pushing that on other people and playing like the good cop compared to the bad cops who are making decisions and are bringing about conflict. And I'm sorry, that's really violent, and we're all doing that together. We can't shadow that out. And we can't just be quiet and act like we don't have rage, period, and be empathetic on the surface if we're creating division in our personal relationships, our business relationships, with our kids. We don't know it, because we've gotten away with it all our lives, is to sit there quietly or be the good girl, be perfect, be calm about it, just be calm, don't get upset, right? And then it sends a signal to everyone else, be calm, don't, stop, don't, you're big, I'm going to disconnect, you're too big, I have to go, controlling, see? But at the surface, we'll say, I don't know, there's something about your, I can't, well, we won't even say it, we'll just leave, right? That's what I mean. That's just is not loving, but we can't help it. And what I needed someone to do was be authentically empathetic with me and say, your silence is aggressive because you're here, you're pretending to be here, you have an agenda, it's coming from your silence and your empathy, you want everyone else to kind of conform, but then you're pretending like that's not an agenda. And, you know, nobody was going to call that out on me, is what I saw. Because when you're quiet and you don't rock the boat, you can blend in. And that's how I survived. Chose safety and separation from peace, and then separation from a non-dual experience that kept me safe from the buried anger. That affected everyone that I was in relationship with in very profound ways. It created inertia where we couldn't move forward on projects simply because I wasn't stepping up and speaking my true thoughts and feelings, a lot because of spirituality, frankly, which reinforced the silence and the choosing of safety in that silence, which is kind of the nail in the coffin for an anger repressor, is to chase the very trauma response that's kept us safe, the stillness, the sitting in the corner while dad and mom are arguing and being very quiet, being a good girl at dinner, showing up good, helping other people. See, trauma. But it just looks like something else, doesn't it? Well, what I've learned in just take full responsibility in relationship, how am I not communicating? How do I not say what's important to me? How am I waiting for someone else to do it so that I don't have to take responsibility? How am I doing that with my partner? How am I just sitting here expecting my needs to get met, not doing the work around buried anger to see how I'm seething at the unconscious, trying to get my needs met, and then denying it, being false at the surface, and then pretending like there are narcissists outside myself so I don't have to feel any of it, and then help people who are suffering so I can really distract myself from buried anger. It's sinister, I'm telling you. But at a certain level of consciousness, it, you really see it. But at another level where you have buried anger, it doesn't look like that. And so, although I can't be false and be the kind of empathetic ego that I used to be in any relationship, I can't be myself. And I think that's really empathetic because, first of all, I love myself and you then. I love my experience. I allow it. And I love yours then. I can allow yours. That's love. But anything else was just an imposter in all relationships. Trying to get my needs met when love and safety are only found within, because we already are that. The repression makes us feel like something is missing. It is. It's the buried emotions. Bring the buried emotions into awareness. It doesn't feel like something is missing because the suffering goes away, or it did for me. And then the safety is met because, again, I say it a few times, you guys just hear it. When you're choosing safety unconsciously, trying to find it like survival outside yourself or love or approval, you can't see that if you process the buried emotions, that activity will stop. You'll find that internal power, if you're an anger repressor, which is safety, boundaries, full expression, authenticity, being able to make clearer decisions even to protect yourself, coming from your consciousness, being more conscious. You find that love and safety within. You have so much more to offer everyone. You have yourself to offer yourself and everyone, your authentic self. If that's interesting, I have a link in the, even if it's a little bit scary, I have a link in the description as always. It takes you to two places. One is the KI Jumpstarter group. If you want to learn this work in a, it's very popular actually. It's been filling up. Learn this group in a 1 month mentorship set or a 1 month group mentorship setting. And then, well, my most favorite way to work with people, if you can see the depth of this work and how it applies so uniquely to you, whatever your suffering is, you can imagine that my 90-day intensive is the best to really dive deep here. And so that link will take you there too. A free talk with me about that intensive. Thank you.